Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Wednesday, August 31st. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Luke Mathers. Coming up this morning, Matt Rothschild from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign discusses the ongoing effort to get voters to take very seriously the very real threats to American democracy. Tom Killian of Citizens for a Clean Wausau talks about the local conflict over PFAS in the city's drinking water, as well as other issues like affordable housing and diversity. Dr. Ben Weston from the Medical College of Wisconsin is scheduled to join us along with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and we'll get a Wisconsin update on the coronavirus epidemic, plus a toilet update and more. But as often happens here, first we have to take care of some weather and some sports. Let's do the weather first, because that's the good news. These are going to be two of the most gorgeous days to wrap up summer. And we know this is true because tomorrow is the first day of school in many school districts around Wisconsin. So it's just going to be kind of sad, kind of brutal. But for those of you who aren't in school and can skip work today and tomorrow, you should. And Luke just took off his headphones and is leaving the building. But the rest of you who are not quiet quitting can stick around, enjoy the weather for the next couple of days before a front comes through, some rain on Friday, and then that'll usher in some cool but nice weather for Labor Day weekend. The Brewers lost to the lowly Pirates. I'm so sick of that line. You know, the Brewers lost to the lowly Cubs, Pirates, Reds, whatever. And this time around, the final score was 4-2. Jason Alexander pitched strong five innings, but then the bullpen, especially Matt Bush and Brad Boxberger, could not hold things. Colton Wong's fourth inning homer accounted for the only Brewers runs of the game. So we'll move on and try it one more time. I wanted to really get things going with Sean Duffy stepping on a rake, and there's just no other way to put it. I think we mentioned it once before when he made these remarks, and I'll come back to them right after I give you the update on what the Justice Department is finding in those boxes of documents that were being kept at Mar-a-Lago after being thieved, shall we say, crimed by Donald Trump and his team. The latest report from the DOJ, a filing in court, said that while it painted the clearest picture yet, the Washington Post says, of the department's efforts to retrieve the documents before taking the extraordinary step of searching a former president's private property. Among the new disclosures, the filing says, the search yielded three classified documents in desks inside Mr. Trump's office, with more than 100 documents in 13 boxes or containers with classified markings in the residence, including some at the most restrictive levels. But I really want to come back to the one part in the sentence there. Three of those documents were in desks inside Mr. Trump's office. I take you back to August, what was it, the 19th, I think, when former Congressman Sean Duffy was on Fox and Friends. And in the first part of this clip, he basically calls the president an idiot, saying, you know, he doesn't know what's in those boxes. He probably had nothing to do with what's in those boxes. And then goes on to say, I mean, for him to be, you know, a criminally investigated, he'd have to do something really dumb with top secret documents. Let's give a listen to what Sean Duffy said a couple of weeks ago.
Ever think that Donald Trump was packing boxes out of the White House to move them to Mar-a-Lago? Do you think that he went through the boxes in Mar-a-Lago? Do you think he knows what he had in those boxes? I don't think he did. And so to come after Donald Trump criminally, I think it's going to be very challenging for the Department of Justice, because I don't think he packed them. I don't think he knew what was in them. There was a negotiation about those boxes, but Donald Trump didn't look through them. Donald Trump didn't pack them. And so criminally, I don't think there's going to be any liability here, or very challenging for the Department of Justice, unless he had top secret information in his desk drawer at Mar-a-Lago and they found that. Unless he had top secret information in his desk drawer at Mar-a-Lago, in his desk drawer at Mar-a-Lago, in his desk drawer at Mar-a-Lago, and they found that, maybe, but more than likely, it's in boxes down in some locker room in Mar-a-Lago, and it'll go nowhere.
Yeah, you tell him, Sean. Again, in the report, The search yielded three classified documents in desks inside Mr. Trump's office. So Sean Duffy joining so many other Republicans in doing their impression of Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons and stepping on rakes. Let's listen live to the latest Republican strategy meeting. Yes, it's been that kind of a week. I can only say that from the very beginning, if you are defending somebody accused of taking classified top secret information at the highest levels of U.S. security, if you're defending that person just blindly because there's an R next to their name or D for that matter, and you don't do the homework, you deserve to look like you're stepping on a rake. To take it a step further, the House Judiciary Committee Republicans have their own Twitter account, and they mocked the photo yesterday that was put up of the documents found in Trump's office. Many of them marked top secret. They were commingled with other material, including like magazines. And the House Republicans put up on Twitter, oh yeah, that Time magazine must really be a threat to national security. That's what you saw in that picture? That's what you saw, not the other things marked top secret. You're embarrassing yourself. You are clowning yourself like Sideshow Bob. We'll be back in a bit. You're up north. Welcome back. It's a Wednesday morning. This is Up North News. You can get our daily newsletter by signing up on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click on newsletter in the top banner. Matt Rothschild is with us. He's the executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. He's been there since 2015. He has concentrated his work on raising public awareness of the need to ban gerrymandering, limit big money and dark money in politics, protect and expand the freedom to vote, and to oppose the anti-democracy movement in our state and country. He is the author of the book that every Wisconsin voter actually should own, 12 Ways to Save Democracy in Wisconsin, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Matt, it's nice to have you here.
And it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for holding down the fort up north for civic media. So it's a great expansion, and just delighted to be on here with you.
Thank you very much. And in the 12 ways to save democracy, number 10 is save local media, which is something we've been trying to do both with Courier Newsroom and Up North News and civic media here on the radio. You were kind enough to point out that there is a significant error in the book, 12 ways to save democracy in Wisconsin, because of the timing of publishing. It was supposed to be 13 ways, and way number 13 was not to have an insurrection and try to overthrow a presidential election. I'm guessing that will be in the sequel, the addendum to the book here.
Well, if I ever get around to writing one, but yeah, you're right. I mean, I wrote this book before January 6th and was just doing final proofing for typos when January 6th happened. So I was able to wave at it in the introduction, but I wasn't able to talk about it in any detail in the book. And this is a real crisis that we're facing in this country right now. I think we need to confront this anti-democracy movement head on. I'm happy to see that President Biden is doing that more and more. But, you know, what does the anti-democracy movement consist of? Let's take a quick look at that. It certainly consists of the Trump cult. I mean, there are tens of millions of people still in this country that think Donald Trump is the greatest thing since the SOS pad. And then there are, the white nationalists or the white Christian nationalists, these super armed people, some of them carrying Confederate flags, some of them actually carrying Nazi flags or having Nazi tattoos on their bodies or wearing shirts that say Pinochet did nothing wrong. Pinochet was the dictator in Chile who killed thousands of people and tortured tens of thousands more. Or they're wearing shirts that say 6 million wasn't enough, which means that Hitler didn't kill enough Jews in the Holocaust. That's what the Proud Boys are wearing on their shirts. Those are the folks who were part of this insurrection on January 6th. So we've got to be really clear about who those folks are and how hideous their ideas are and how antithetical they are to democracy. They want to destroy democracy. They don't want democracy. So you've got those folks, and then you have just a great degree of irrationalism in this country that we see with the denialism on COVID, the denialism on November elections in 2020. You see it in QAnon. And then there's also this right-wing media infrastructure that feeds all these people this toxic propaganda as if on a 24/7 IV drip pad. So I mean, I know you're trying to counter that. I'm trying to counter that. But that's a real problem. If that's all that they ingest, you know, it's garbage in and garbage out.
Let's take it right to one of the people that has the most direct impact on this, because we can talk about what is almost a caricature of Proud Boys and militiamen. And we think of, you know, Bubbas with headbands and everything else. We don't think of a multimillionaire in a suit. But I'm going to read from a Wisconsin Public Radio article from last November when Republican Senator Ron Johnson told lawmakers, state lawmakers, that they should strip the Wisconsin Elections Commission of its power and take the power to oversee elections for themselves. Ron Johnson mentioned this, citing a part of the U.S. Constitution that says state legislatures can set, quote, times, places, and manner of federal elections. He told public radio, "I think it's imperative that we restore confidence in our election system for everybody, that he's completely lost confidence in the Wisconsin Elections Commission." Matt, saying that you've lost confidence in something is, you know, about as textbook propaganda as it gets, that you just say you've lost confidence in something, even if it's working, and use that as a pretext. So while we talk about, you know, the mobs, the militias and everything else, the real danger is right inside the marble halls of the U.S. Capitol.
Absolutely. And I love this propaganda jujitsu that people like Ron Johnson and other Republicans are using. They're saying people have lost faith in our elections. Why did they lose faith in our elections? Because Donald Trump has told them a lie 20 times a day since November 6, 2020. That's why they've lost faith in our elections, because of the big liar in chief. And, you know, Ron Johnson knows better. He knows that Joe Biden won the election fair and square. But, you know, like Speaker Voss, he can't admit it in public because he's worried about alienating the far right base, which is the force that they think will keep them in power. And you're touching on something really important here, Pat, which is the long play here by Republicans is to sully the reputation of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, that Republicans, if they're able to defeat Governor Evers, will destroy the Wisconsin Elections Commission and then do one of two things: either give all the power to the legislature itself, which is what Ron Johnson was proposing right there, or give it to the Secretary of State. Now, if Doug LaFalla loses also and Amy Loudenbeck wins, the Republican, we'll have Republicans in charge not only of administering our elections, but of certifying our elections. And so they could, if they wanted to, just throw out tens of thousands of votes, like three arch conservatives on the Wisconsin Supreme Court wanted to do, and then decide by themselves who actually won the election. And then, you know, that would make voting irrelevant practically. And that's what these folks want to do. That's how anti-democracy Ron Johnson and these other folks are when they talk about destroying the Wisconsin Elections Commission.
And look, we can get to the later on why so many people would want to be opposed to the very notion of democracy. It used to be something that was immediately disqualifying, but it does get back to the snake oil that Donald Trump is selling, and that there are just too many people willing to buy. But keeping things closer to Wisconsin and things that destroy confidence in elections, or at least, you know, diminish it, is that it finally took until a couple of weeks back for Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to tell former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman that he was no longer, quote unquote, investigating the 2020 election. And yet, Matt, let's not make Robin Voss into a hero here. He didn't do it because he suddenly saw the light that, you know, that this Gableman probe was tarnishing public confidence.
No, I mean, Gableman, it was an embarrassment to Wisconsin since the very beginning of the circus that he was running. And Robin Voss didn't recognize that he was an embarrassment to Wisconsin until Gableman almost took Voss's head off politically and almost ended his political career by endorsing as an opponent who was a total nobody, totally inexperienced, totally underfinanced, but Gableman and Trump himself endorsed him, and that almost took Voss down. So that got Voss to finally say goodbye, Gableman, and good riddance to Michael Gableman for that matter. Michael Gableman was just an atrocious propagandist for the far right. But look, the Gableman circus did not succeed. Fortunately, we had good media, mainstream media in this state from the Journal Sentinel and the State Journal and the Cap Times and AP and Wisconsin Public Radio, who kept pointing out the falsehoods that Gableman was uttering. Gableman was just a playground bully, threatening to jail the mayors of Green Bay and Madison, and also a horribly sexist person who was making fun of the apparel of Megan Wolf, the very competent administrator at the Wisconsin Elections Commission. I mean, the guy was a joke all the way around, and he was biased from day one because actually he led a protest a couple days after Trump lost saying Trump won and this election was stolen by bureaucrats. So, why was he appointed and who appointed him? Voss appointed him. That's the thing. He's Voss's Frankenstein monster. Voss is responsible for appointing him. Voss is responsible for appointing Janelle Branchen to run the Wisconsin Assembly Committee on Elections. She's an election denier too. And so Voss's hands are hardly clean in this matter.
I also want to ask you about the money now that is just flooding into the dark money and the corporate money that is flooding into Wisconsin politics as a result of the Citizens United decision from back in 2010. We're really seeing the manifestation of that now. The one drum that I've been banging continuously is to remind people that when they see something from Wisconsin Truth PAC, that is really just a couple of Wisconsin billionaires who saved tens of millions, if not more, from a Ron Johnson sweetheart tax deal. So they're putting some of those millions into a super PAC, Wisconsin Truth PAC, to say anything that will keep Ron Johnson in office. So that one's already, we've talked about that one quite a bit. But I imagine you're seeing more than a few other outside groups that, again, they have the generic name at the bottom of the screen and people just don't know the source of all the money that's flooding into the governor's race and the Senate race.
Yeah, and that's the problem with our campaign finance law nationally and statewide, these dark money groups. But the two multimillionaires you're referring to are, of course, Diane Hendricks of ABC Supply and Richard and Elizabeth Elon of the Elon Corporation. And the Elons actually don't even live in Wisconsin. You know, they live in Lake Forest, Illinois. But you could have a group, you and I could form a group called, Badgers for Eternal Victory and have our, if we have them, multimillionaire friends give to Badgers for Eternal Victory. And then we could run ads on TV saying, call Governor Evers and tell him to stop being such and such, paid for by, Badgers for Eternal Victory. And everyone would know that we would want people, if we were running that ad, not to vote for Evers. But we don't have to disclose our donors because we're not using the magic words of vote for or vote against. And the U.S. Supreme Court in a bunch of foolish rulings, but one was Citizens United, said that corporations and super rich individuals can spend unlimited amounts of money. And if they're dark money groups, they said in another decision, which was Wisconsin Right to Life, that these so-called issue advocacy groups don't have to disclose their donors. So we don't know who's throwing the mud, who's paying for the mud that's splattering on our screens constantly right now, Pat, and splattering the screens of all your listeners from now till November. We don't get to know who's paying for the mud.
My memory is now fuzzy on what exactly predicated this, but this isn't entirely new. It was in 1996, and I was working as a reporter at TV 13 in Eau Claire, when Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce said, we're now going to run so-called issue ads. And I was trying to explain to our viewers at the time that an issue ad is a political ad. It just doesn't have those magic words, vote for or vote against. And I tried to convey how ridiculous that is. And yet it took root. And so that loophole that you can drive a truck through is what has us awash in ads. I mean, Wisconsin Manufacturing Commerce came in hard from that point forward and has been, in my mind, the de facto Republican Party in terms of, campaign commercials.
Yeah, they have spent $27 million or more in the last 11 years to keep Republicans in charge of the legislature. And of course, they helped Walker become governor. So Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the big business lobby, is one of the biggest lobbyists in the state and the biggest spenders on elections. And, you know, also there was the legislature in 2015 made it even easier for corporations and super rich people here in Wisconsin to give unlimited amounts of money. So, you know, it's the wild, wild west here in campaign finance land, and it's only helping the super rich and the corporations. It's not helping us citizens.
All right. More with Matt Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign after this break. You're up north.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Always on my mind. Song written by Wayne Carson.
Welcome back. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow with Matt Rothschild, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. And prior to joining them in 2015, he worked at the Progressive Magazine for 32 years, for most of those years, editor and publisher of the Progressive. And as we learned today, when we always ask guests their musical favorites, a Willie Nelson fan. Does that go way back for you?
Huge Willie Nelson fan, and that song that Luke was playing in the background there is a song my wife and I danced to at weddings, so always on my mind. We love Willie Nelson. Willie Nelson is 89, still going strong. There was a tremendous article about Willie Nelson in the New York Times Magazine just either last week or the week before, talking about everything. You know, he wrote the Patsy Cline song, too, that became so famous, also in the 1950s, so he's been doing this thing for a long time.
Oh yeah, he has no doubt seen it all. Where did you grow up? I'm wondering what got you hooked onto, you know, Willie Nelson, for example.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, but I liked country music starting really in high school. I had kind of a brother who was you know, not into the traditional music that high schoolers were listening to, and he turned me on a little bit to country music, and I like the stories of country music. So yeah, I like Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, that whole group.
Okay.
Johnny Cash too, of course.
Sure. You know, and I'm sure if anybody's saying, wait, somebody from the suburbs, you know, listening to country music, I always like to tell the little aside that from our 3 years of living on Grand Cayman in the Caribbean, very, very big country music fans there, because way back in the day, there were no radio stations in the Cayman Islands, and all they could get was whatever American radio stations, you know, would come over the airwaves late at night. And there was a big country station. I forget which one now. And consequently, ever since, you know, you've got a whole lot of country music fans in the Caribbean. So you just never know where somebody's musical stylings are going to come from.
Yeah, I just love the stories, the country music stories. They're great.
We are talking about the threats, the very real threats to democracy that are posed by not just activists and by, you know, people prone to violence, but by current elected officials and those who want to be elected officials. Mm-hmm. We could talk at length about individual races, and I'm going to focus on the Tim Michaels race against Governor Tony Evers just briefly here, because there is a new story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning that talks about the donations he and his wife made to anti-gay, anti-LGBTQ, anti-abortion groups, totaling more than $250,000 in just the year 2020 alone. The article goes on to talk about the various groups that he's donated to, and it certainly is in keeping with comments that he has made. But as I have said, Matt, I think as he gets closer to the general election, he's going to probably try to moderate those positions, or at least give the impression that his positions aren't as extreme. But you're in the business of following the money, and money is a pretty good indicator of your values when you're giving that much.
Yeah, and this was his own private foundation. He and his wife are the two trustees of this foundation. They were the ones making the decision about where they were going to spend their money, which so-called charitable causes they were giving to. And so they chose to give to charitable causes that were extreme on the far right on issues of abortion and issues of gay rights. And just let's look at the abortion issue. I mean, he said several times during the campaign that he favored the Dobbs decision, the overturning of Roe v. Wade. He says it mirrors his feelings exactly. That means there's no exception for rape and incest for a woman or even a young girl who's been raped. She has to have the baby, according to Tim Michaels. That is so far out of kilter with the vast majority of Wisconsinites. I'm sure the vast majority of your listeners, even the majority of Republicans, want to have their daughter or a friend of theirs that they know, or a daughter of a friend of theirs that they know who's been having to go through the horrible experience of being raped, that woman doesn't need to carry that baby. So I don't know how he's going to defend that position. I think he's going to lose on this. I think there are girls and women and men who love women all across Wisconsin who want to defend the rights of a woman to make this very difficult decision on their own if they've been the victim of incest or rape, for sure, and actually in most other cases. So I think he's on the losing end of this. I think if Governor Evers and the supporters of Governor Evers can talk about this issue in a sensible way, they'll make a lot of progress.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that in our next hour here on Up North News as well. In writing about How to Save Democracy, and I remember when the book first came out, and I wondered if that was, you know, that if that was going to raise eyebrows, if people were going to say, you know, is that hyperbolic? You know, do we really need to save democracy? Obviously, there are people who are insiders, activists, and who see things, and we're trying to sound some alarm bells pretty early on. But I think time has only proven you right, especially since January 6th, that there are things that actually have to be done about democracy. Now we've talked about campaign finance, and you know how we've gone so far backward compared to what we need to do. But when we get to democracy itself, as I look at some of the steps you laid out in the book, one that seems so fundamental, again, and is done in every other developed democracy on earth, is to make voting easier, not harder. And those are things that theoretically we can and should still do here in the United States, Matt, right, at both the state and federal levels?
Sure. I mean, we could have automatic voter registration so that when you go and get your driver's license at the DMV, you're automatically put on the voting rolls. We could have, you know, voting by mail like they do in several states around the country and have done very successfully. It started out in Oregon, and it's, you know, it's very workable. But what have we seen over the last 2 years? But a concentrated campaign to put up more obstacles on the way to the voting booth here in Wisconsin and around the country. But, you know, the Wisconsin legislature, dominated by Republicans, passed a whole raft of anti-voting bills to make it harder for everyone to vote by absentee ballot. And oddly to me, to make it harder for persons with disabilities to vote. I mean, do they have some poll that shows most persons with disabilities are voting Democratic? I doubt it. I don't really understand it, except that they're trying to fuel their far right base and keep this propaganda going about November 2020 election so that those rabid folks on the far right come out in droves, not only this November, but in November 2024. But yeah, it's just been one assault after another on our freedom to vote. And thank God we had Governor Evers there to veto them.
Yeah, which definitely won't be the case if Tim Michaels defeats him in November. It's not the wildest prediction that somebody could make, but I will say that if we come through all of this and if more rational heads prevail, what this chapter may do, what its legacy may be, is actually make it easier at some point to put these things into place, where we do make voting easier, because it is already obvious that there was no widespread fraud, that there is already such strong measures of security, and that you're always looking to improve elections. And I think that in the end, this may lead people to go, oh yeah, we should actually make voting easier. It is already safe and secure. I'm not saying it's going to happen right away, but again, it's all provided we come through this very surreal chapter right now of people thinking that 2,000 mules is fact-based rather than propaganda.
Yeah, I think you're getting at something really important, because I think at some point this Trump bubble is going to burst. I remember back when Nixon was impeached, and then a couple years later, you really couldn't find anyone who would admit in public, except for Roger Stone, that they actually voted for Richard Nixon. And I think something like that may ultimately happen with Donald Trump, because not only are these classified documents that he stole, but the January 6th committee shoes are about to drop on his head, too. And I believe he's going to be indicted across the board on a whole range of felonies. And his popularity will eventually recede. And then I hope we get to some real fundamental reforms, like you're saying, Pat, on voting, making voting easier, having people register when they go to the DMV. And then even some other bigger reforms, like maybe getting rid of the Electoral College finally by having an amendment to the Constitution, or certainly, getting rid of the Insurrection Act, which Donald Trump was considering, issuing. Or issuing troops under the Insurrection Act, where he'd have the power just to bring out the tanks in the streets. So we really would be a third world country. We got to get that Insurrection Act off the books. Congress has got to pass a bill that says we no longer are going to let the president on his own determination say when the troops can come in the streets, because otherwise, the next president or the one after that, who may be a fascist like Trump, but not quite as crazy, or narcissistic, but a smarter one would just go ahead and do it.
And let's remember that
that's a real problem.
When a president does that, like a Trump, or like these lawsuits about elections, they don't target everywhere. You wouldn't see troops up here in Eagle Point in Chippewa County. They would say the problem is in Milwaukee and Chicago, and you would see the focus there, much like the Center on Tech and Civic Life, the group that gave donations to communities throughout the country and throughout Wisconsin to more than 200 different communities. But the lawsuit only focuses on the five largest cities where private money went into helping municipalities whose budgets are so tight that they welcomed any help with making sure their elections are safe and secure.
Right. And let's remember, Trump asked his military commanders, can't you go out and just shoot some of those Black Lives Matter protesters? He wanted them shot. That's on the public record. And so if he were to win again, we might see some hideous atrocities like that. But that just shows, number one, he was a racist. Number two, he has a fascination with violence. I mean, General Milley was the one who reported this and was just horrified by it and almost resigned a couple days later.
We have talked at length over the past decade about gerrymandering and the need to try to take the pen that draws the maps out of the hands of politicians. The follow-up question then becomes, okay, you want to get rid of it, but it's been around forever. It's been used in different ways by different parties over the years. Is there a perfect alternative? And I'm not going to ask you if there's a perfect one, but is there a better alternative that has proven itself and that should be put in place again, whenever more rational control is brought back to all levels of government?
I mean, this is the thing. I mean, Iowa solved this problem four decades ago. It's called the Iowa model. The people who are in power and the party that's in power doesn't get to draw the maps. Career civil servants draw the maps, and then the legislature approves those maps. Now, if you're going to say career civil servants have biases too, well, guess what? The Iowa legislature passed a law that solves that problem too by making specific stipulations that career civil servants can't do X, Y, or Z to help a particular party or an elected official. So it's worked great in Iowa. Actually, it was put in place by a Republican legislature in Iowa, and the people of Iowa love the way it works. That's why they've kept it for more than 40 years. So we've been a proponent of the Iowa model here in Wisconsin. I mean, if it works in Iowa, it can work in Wisconsin. But the problem is that the parties that are in power, and the Republican Party that's been in power now in the legislature for the past 10 years, they make the maps work for them. They rig the maps. I mean, Robin Voss, I heard him testify in favor of this map that he rigged himself with his staff. He said, yes, we used partisanship. He confessed to the crime. We used partisanship when we were drawing the maps. That means he tried to push as many Democrats into as few districts as possible so that the rest of the map would be more Republican. Republicans would get more representation than they deserve. So he's got it rigged.
I've got just a few seconds left, so I want to ask one quick question. I hope it's not a stumper, but ranked choice voting is being used in Alaska for the first time, and it's being used in some other places. What's your feeling on it? Is it something that you think is going to catch on in more places over time?
I do. I think it just gives us more opportunities to express our political viewpoints. Ranked choice voting, you list your top three favorite candidates instead of your top one, for instance, in a crowded Democratic field. You know, you could choose a couple candidates who were running for governor last time, for instance. And then if your top choice doesn't win, your second choice moves to the top. So I'm very much in favor of it.
All right. Appreciate that. Let's talk more about that next time around. Matt Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Already looking forward to our next visit. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Anytime, Pat. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Take care. We'll be back after this. You're up north. I thought that was probably as close. There aren't many toilet jokes out there, or toilet songs, but bathroom songs. We can go with Joe Cocker's coming in through the bathroom window to give Luke an update on what home ownership is going to be like for him someday. It's time to tell you the latest on Pat's effort to repair a toilet, which I think would take a plumber, you know, maybe an hour, probably not. What is this, week three now, Luke, that we're at on the update?
I think we may be in the middle of week three. I don't know.
To like get you up to speed.
Weeks. Yeah.
There is a toilet in the, what, I don't know if you'd call it the mud room or whatever, when you come in from the garage, and it had been leaking because of a little hose. I forgot to bring that visual aid with me. A little hose that puts water in the tank. It runs from, as I've now learned, from the fill valve to the overflow and the flush valve. And after 28 years since the house was built, that hose, the rubber has become very hard and brittle, and so needs to be replaced. But of course, we didn't just do that. While we were at it, we thought, well, this is old. A handyman friend advised changing out the fill valve as well. So we tried that. And we actually had some success. My wife and I did. You know, I had to get underneath and, you know, get a kind of a face full of water, you know, at first when you take the hose and the, you know, the little drain nut off of it. But we were so proud of ourselves. We got that fill valve replaced. We put on the new supply line, attached it to the old flush valve, and it did not work. It was not a match. We were still having a water issue. So it became clear at that point, we have to replace the flush valve too. And again, let me make clear, until that moment in time, I did not know what a flush valve was, a fill valve was. I believed that it was magic and gravity that did everything inside of that ceramic tank. So off we went to go get a new flush valve, which I now hold up for Luke to see, complete with the little chain that goes on it, the little flapper.
Isn't that supposed to be in the toilet? Yeah.
It's supposed to be in the toilet. You notice it's in my hand right now. And here's why. We actually did the next part relatively trouble-free, and that was removing the old flush valve, which also means removing the tank. You have to loosen these nuts underneath. Again, I had to get way down under there. And if you know anything about my recent issues with my knees and such, you know that this was not something a man of my age does easily. But we did. And we got the tank off. We were so proud. We watched the video on YouTube a couple more times just to show how proud we were of ourselves for getting this done. And we got to the next step, which is at the bottom of the tank. You have to turn, you know, you've got the tank now, turn it upside down, the part that would go into the seat part, you know, where the flush valve goes in on the inside of the tank. On the outside, there is a plastic nut. And I mean, like 2 to 2.5 inches of a nut that has to come off. It ain't coming off. That thing is not budging. And again, we're talking, you know, 2 inches. I don't have a crescent wrench or anything that big. So what we tried that I'm showing Luke now is basically a clamp. It's a clamp for holding things together after you glue them. But if you open it up good and wide, you could probably get to the 2 inches and put it around the nut and put some pressure on it.
But you got no torque on it to twist.
Got absolutely no torque on it to
absolutely
twist.
Absolutely no, no torque.
You could not be more correct. So one of the things that would be great to have would be what's called a channel lock, you know, of a certain size. I have a channel lock. I have a normal channel lock that people would have at home. And as you can see here, Luke, it comes out to get maybe an inch wide to take things off. I am very blessed to have a neighbor, Don, who has been retired for many years now. But Don has a tool for everything. We learned that from the very beginning. If you need something, Don's got you covered, man. So I wandered next door and asked Don if he had a larger
a monkey wrench. You need a monkey wrench almost is what you need.
Look at what this man has. This is a channel lock, man. This is a crocodile that emerges out of the Everglades. That's the jaw space on this thing. There's no way this won't work. It did not work. Because either it is either put on there with Gorilla Glue, or more likely something this big can't get real good torque on it because it's so much thicker than the mounting nut, also known as the spud nut. Something else I've learned in this little misadventure here. So I now have to return these monster channel locks to Don, and I have to go in one of two directions. I either have to buy a special wrench, like it's kind of a pipe wrench that's built just for this one-time use, or there's some other, you know, substance that you can put on the plastic nut to, you know, help to loosen it up, or you have to cut through it. You have to cut through this old plastic nut to get that removed. So I've got to pick one of those avenues when time allows, because we're kind of busy people, which is why we're now somewhere in the middle of week three of this endeavor. But at some point, I swear to God, if I have to buy a special wrench to remove this spud nut, we are going to replace the spud nuts in every other toilet in this house. And I am going to go up and down the street asking people if I can remove their spud nuts. Because I'm going to get my money's worth out of this.
That seems like an interesting proposition if people don't know what you're asking for.
Yeah, well, they know me well enough that it's going to be pretty harmless, I hope. So
I think there's a third option, Pat, as well, that you didn't mention of the two paths that you could go forward with. There's a third path. You could get a new toilet.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, it's not that we don't want to. I mean, we have not hesitated. Again, we're in a fortunate position in life. If we need to pay for something, we will pay for something. But sometimes you see something and you go, okay, we could pay to replace this, but this just needs a little more persuasion. And apparently this big old channel locks was not persuasion enough. So I need a different form of persuasion to get this old spud nut off of the bottom of a ceramic tank. And the thing is, if you do it wrong, you'll crack the porcelain. And then what?
Then you need a new toilet.
You need to buy a new tank. Yes, exactly. So that's what I'm saying.
Where
this story goes.
You
yes,
are approaching that option as well. So I'm just saying, maybe head it off and then cut your losses and purchase yourself a new toilet.
So the story will continue. Coming up next, we have Tom Killian from Citizens for a Clean Wausau to talk about some issues there. But first, right after the news here at the top of the hour, a special surprise guest just for the benefit of Luke Mathers. That's right, folks. Zucchini Talk with an expert right after this. You're up north.